All right, we're going to begin by finishing Tehillim 116, Kuf Tet Zayin. We're going to be finishing up here. And we're going to start with Pasuk Tet Zayin, beginning with the word Ana. Now, it's a word that we know. We've seen the word many times, okay? Ana could mean please. It could mean I beseech you. It could mean also the idea of actual thanks. So who said that? So that was done by the Ibn Ezra. He lives in 1055 to 1135. I apologize, 1089 to 1167. I apologize. Strike the first one from the record. And the Ibn Ezra says this in Sefer Shemot. He says, Sha'ana hu lashon pius o derech hoda'ah. It's the idea of reconciliation, appeasement, to mollify, or it's the language of thanks. Okay? Hoda'ah. In our case, if you just jump down to Pasuk Yud Zayin, look how almost prescient the Ibn Ezra was. Look what the Pasuk says. L'cha ezbach zevach todah. Right? To you, I'm offering up as a korban todah, a korban of thanks. So clearly, beyond any doubt, in this case, ana is really thank you.
So that what it says here?
I know that. Can't help it. Okay? But if my choice is to go with the translator or to go with the Ibn Ezra, guess who wins every time? Okay? So that's idea number one in Pasuk Tet Zayin. And idea number two, look how David HaMelech describes himself. He says, Ana Hashem, drawing upon, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unbelievable rachamim. Okay? Ki ani avdecha. I am your servant. Okay? Now, if you want also, eved, we all know, means slave. May not be a very PC word, but certainly it's somebody in an asymmetrical relationship where David HaMelech is recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unlimited power, and in comparison, he's simply an Eved. Ani Avdecha, I am the your servant, Ben Ametecha, and I am the servant of your maidservant. So in a sense, by calling his own mother a maidservant, we're not talking here where David HaMelech is trying to be an impressive sort of chap. In fact, what is David essentially saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? When I'm talking to you right now, I'm not talking to you, but Surat Melech. I'm not talking to you as a king. Right? So I might be king, but compared to you, I'm nothing. Right? Then he says, Patachta lamo seirai, and you loosened my ropes, my yoke, okay, that was upon me. And when was that? When he was ceaselessly being chased. We talked about this last week by Shaul, okay? The tragic figure, one of the most tragic figures in all of Tanakh was Shaul, because Shaul could have possibly been, according to Chazal, even the Mashiach. So it's a very, very sad situation. Okay. So, L'cha ezbach zevach todah, to you I offer a korban todah for having saved me. Okay. U'v'shem Hashem ekra, and in the name of Hashem will I call. What does that remind all of you of when we say, Uvishem Hashem Ekra? What's that remind you of? From Tefillah. Kishem Hashem Ekra, Havu, Godel, Lelokeinu. A pasuk in Sefer Devarim. Okay? And in a sense, David, if you will, is dovetailing, right? He's scaling off of that pasuk in Sefer Devarim, where it says, Kishem Hashem Ekra, the name of Hashem I'll call. Okay, And Godel Elokeinu, Havu Godel Elokeinu, and I will bring greatness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, when and where is David going to do this? He wants to do it in Bechatzrat Hashem, because he wants it to be, as we said last week, a very public sort of affair, which we're going to see momentarily. Now, Pasuk Yud Chet. Excuse?
Where is he living at the time? When
Yerushalayim.
He is in Yerushalayim.
And to quote Mel Brooks, it's good to be the king. Okay? And he's the king. But remember, he's a very interesting fellow. He's as great as his power was, he was not arrogant. Right? If anything, he was really a very humble person, at least in his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? And in fact, as I pointed out to you in another week, he's called Avdi many, many, many times throughout Tanakh. Okay, so it's that sort of relationship that he has with the Kadosh Baruch Hu.
When he's referencing, you know, his mother, could he be referencing what?
I don't think so. I mean, certainly it's not pshat. And this is very, very similar to what we say on Yom Tov. Okay, we've before we go and we sing all the communal songs, right, on Yom Tov at the time of the Torah being taken out. So we have a silent prayer, and we say, you know, that I am so and so Ben Ametecha. We follow the same language. So there's a closeness here. I don't think he's talking about historically, which I think he's the great, great grandson of Rut, if I remember correctly. Okay? All right. Now we have Pasuk Yud Chet. Now, if you look, again, since it's been a little bit of time, if you look at Yud Chet and you look at Yud Dalet, as I pointed out last week, it's the same exact Pasuk. Okay? Same exact Pasuk. So I suggested, I believe it might have even have been last week, that after all, David HaMelech is the Meshurer, the singer par excellence. Okay? And I suggested that this is a refrain, like you have in many, many songs, okay, where you're repeating it. Now, that might be a little bit overly simplistic, but it certainly fits into the idea that these were tehillim that were sung, right? And they were on occasion accompanied by instruments and so forth. That, I mean, it's a very naturalistic explanation of why you'd repeat it. On the other hand, the Ibn Ezra, he's the man of the hour, says this, the ta'am lahazkir pamacheret, and the reason why we're mentioning the same exact pasuk another time, ki haneder shenadarti, because David HaMelech is reminding everyone that the neder that he took, right, or the nedarim that he took, that as a result of HaKadosh Baruch Hu saving him, or as a we're not sure if it was subsequent to being saved or preparatory to being saved. And we had that conversation. You asked certain things last week about that. So, lo ashal menu b'makom acher. I will not pay back this neder, I won't fulfill the neder in any other place. Ki'im bebeit Hashem. Okay? And that's why the very next pasuk is b'chasrot beit Hashem. Okay? So I'm going to fulfill my nedarim in the courtyard of the house of Hashem. B'tochechei Yerushalayim. Again, we talked about this last week, that poetic license, because you don't need certainly so many chafs here. You don't need the yud at all, okay? But, I mean, you simply could say B'tochi Yerushalayim. That would be certainly very acceptable spelling here. But at any rate, you don't need the yud, B'tochi. So again, why the Tochechi? Because it obviously fit with whatever melody was going on behind the scene. So it sort of gives it a rhyme. And a certain cadence. That's why it's there. But the yud is certainly not necessary.
What
so,
vows did he make that he needs to fulfill?
Well, again, we're not entirely sure if the vows were taken beforehand. If you save me, Hashem, then I'll bring these nedarim. Or they could be vows of thanks because it's a korban todah. Right? We're not entirely sure whether it's pre being saved or post being saved.
But was he thinking that he was going to build the Beit HaMikdash, but he didn't? So does that mean his nedar? Right, he just.
Well, he wanted to build a Beit HaMikdash, and then once he's king, Natan tells him, you can't, because you're a man of war.
So, but was his neder?
Okay, but remember, prior to the building of the Beit HaMikdash, you were allowed to offer korbanot in other places. And what, according to the Mefarshim, is being referenced here, we're going to see that in just a minute, according to the Mefarshim, what's being talked about is the place where the Aron Kodesh was being housed. Okay, in Yerushalayim. So, in fact, let's take a look at the Mefarshim who suggest that. First, the Radak. The Radak lives in 1160 to 1235. This is Reb David Kimchi, and he says, when it says here, the Beit Hashem, okay, we know that David HaMelech didn't build the Beit HaMikdash, so the Radak says, B'bayit Shehayabo Ha'aron B'Yerushalayim. It's the house where the Aron was housed in Yerushalayim. Now, this was carried over too, much later on, by the Metzudat David. You all probably remember from when you were in school studying Metzudat David when you were studying Tanakh. So, what he says there is, Atem ha'omdim b'chatzrot Beit Hashem, asher heim b'toch Yerushalayim. Those of you who are standing in the courtyard of the house of Hashem, that is in Yerushalayim, hallelu at Hashem, b'shemechem ha'nes ha'na'aseh li. When you hear about the nisim that were done for me. So it's a little bit longer than what the Radak says, but it's still clearly, obviously not the Beit HaMikdash, and it's still clearly where the Aron Kodesh was. And what the Masudah Davi does that the Radak does not do is say, why? What's going on? And then we really kind of mentioned this last week, that Davi's involved with the Kiddush Hashem, right? He's Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, where everybody is participating in this. Okay? Are there any questions on what we did so far? Go ahead.
Out of ignorance, do we have any idea where the Aron is, or is it destroyed also?
We do not know where it is today. It was buried, according to many of the Jewish sources. Exactly where, we don't know.
Buried by whom?
I don't remember, to be honest with you. You know, there was like a Search of the Lost Ark, wasn't that a Spielberg movie? Raiders of the Lost Ark. So that was based on a lot of speculation, okay, to put it mildly. I don't think we know exactly where. I know we don't know where it is. That I can tell you clearly.
Arrive when we have the third.
You know, this is all above my pay grade. I just don't know.
Because we have to pay you more.
Yeah, I just don't know. Okay, now we come to the next one of the Tehillim. And this is the shortest of the Tehillim in all of Sefer Tehillim. It's but two psukim. There's an old yeshivish adage, though, goes like this. The long Tosafot are the easier ones to understand because Tosafot is expansive in what he has to say, or what they have to say. What's the most difficult Tosafot? When it's very short, aphoristic, and very pithy. So that's carried over. For example, the most difficult Mefarish on the Shulchan Aruch is the Gra. Because what the Gra will do, the Vilna Gaon, he'll reference an entire Gemara and a certain Pshat in three words. And unless you know that Gemara, and you know that reference, and the explanation along the lines that he suggested, you have no idea what just happened. When you see that. So, I thought...
sometimes if something is too long, you get so confused. Because it's either repetition or it tells you the same thing in different words and you're not 100% sure if that's what they're saying.
Well, I can tell you this, that when you have a long... Let's go with Tosafot. When you have a long one, what you need to do is you got to go through it at least twice. The first time you're just going through to get the geography and the general conceptual scheme. The second time or third time you go through it, then you can see that it's actually several layers, shlavim, okay, and that then you can sort of peel back some of the extraneous comments, and you can say, okay, idea number one is this, and here's pretty much where it starts, pretty much where it ends. On occasion, though, and like this, I just had this in a Gemara on Sunday. You have a long Tosafot, and at the very end, you sit there and you go,
huh?
Huh? No matter how many times you do it. And then you even go to, there's even a Sefer in every common Gemara, every standard Gemara, that goes to what's called Piskei Tosafot, the halakhic conclusions of Tosafot. And then you sit there and go, wait a minute, are we reading the same Tosafot? Okay, so at any rate, I had thought, naive me, that these two psukim, I would just be able to simply go through real quickly, because after all, those are my two psukim. But it turns out, it's like that short Tosafot. It's much more complex. First of all, in quotation marks, and not pejoratively, what's the big idea? I mean, obviously, there's something going on here. There's only two psukim. So why would you have only two psukim?
Less now, is more.
Hmm?
Less is more.
Less is more. Okay.
It's right to the heart of man.
Okay. But then, of course, let's go with your assumption. Less is more, right to the heart of the matter. What is the matter? Not in the sense of what's wrong, but what's it talking about? So for that, let's go back to the Radak. And you guys all have a page in your booklet that looks like this. Keep turning, and you will see. Yes. Okay, my copy is a little different than your copy, because yours, I did the old-fashioned cut and paste, and then I scanned it. So I could get everything on one part. But you can see where the scan line is. Okay, it would never fit in certain circles, but we're friends. Okay, so let's look at the Radak. See where he says Radak Tehillim Perakuf Yud Zayin? Okay, so in this Radak, and this is why we get a sense of the complexity here, there's no less than six different ideas. And that's what he's going to share with us. And he's going to tell us why we have only two psukim. So he says this. Zeha mizmor. You see where it starts with that? Okay. This mizmor. This one of the tehillim. Mishnei psukim lavat. It only has two psukim. Okay. Idea number one. Now he's going to explain why. Vuhu liyamot ha-mashiach. I guarantee I didn't know that when I first studied it. And it's talking about the time period of the Mashiach, the epoch of the Mashiach. Okay? Now, why would he say that? And now he's going to explain. V'remez ba'asoto oto shnei psukim levad. Now, if you weren't slightly confused before, now you'll definitely be confused. And the hint that it's talking about the time of the Mashiach is the very fact that there's only two psukim. So if you're confused, don't feel bad. Now he's going to explain it. Third idea. Ki kol ha'amim yiyu l'shnei avarim. Because all the peoples of the world will be on two sides. Levad Yisrael shiyu b'toratam. So going all the way back to who, by the way, with the idea of Ever Echad, it's going back to Avram Avinu, right? The first Ivri, the man who was on the other side. So he says, by themselves will be the Jewish people who will be with their Torah, and they will be on one side. Okay, but by the way, when we're talking about sides here, we're not talking about people being opposed to each other. We're talking about people being differentiated. Okay? So I think that's pretty clear. So he says on one side, so to speak, of the aisle, being that it's a political year, and that's the farthest I'm going to go with that metaphor tonight. Okay, on one side of the aisle, you're going to have the Jewish people, and they're going to be with their Torah. And the Chohat Umot, but all the nations of the world, Lever Acher, they'll be on the other side. Because they're not going to have the Torah. What will they have? Shiva Mitzvot. They'll have the Shiva Mitzvot, Lebnei Noach. Okay? So, in a sense, we'll have what are called in English the Noachides, right? The Bnei Noach, and but they'll be actually keeping the Shiva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, which means things like no killing and you know no murder, no stealing, and so forth. And on the other side will be the Jewish people who keep all the Torah. Now, Nuat, idea number four, V'kulam Yehallelu Ka. All of them are going to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu in their own way. In other words, the Jewish people with their mitzvot and the total idea of the corpus of the Torah will praise Hashem in one way, and the Noachides, the Bnei Noach, okay, which in this case is a very positive idea, okay, they will praise Hashem in their way. Ki kulam yodu Boaz, because at that point everyone will recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's that sound like to you? V'yomahu yeh Hashem echad u'shemo echad. Okay, k'mo shekatuv. Now here's someone you don't hear of very often. Okay, Tzefanya. I don't think any of us, right, in school, maybe some seminary studies Tzefanya, but not often. Right, so it says in Tzefanya, Likro kulam b'shem Hashem, that everybody will call upon the name of Hashem, Ula Avdo, and everyone will serve him, worship him, Shechem Echad, shoulder to shoulder. Again, and this is very, very important, okay? This is what part of the Messianic vision will be. Are there multiple Messianic visions? Of course. But at least for the Radak, who's very Tanakh-oriented, this is how he's painting the picture.
But this reminds me of Elena.
Sure.
And Elena's more than two sukkahs.
Agreed.
So,
that's what I said.
What?
That's what I have to say.
I just don't know how you get from two sukkahs to jumping to time of Mashiach.
Okay, because what he does, basically, conceptually, says the two psukim are a remez, are a hint at the two modalities that will emerge, the acharit hayamim, okay, in the Messianic era.
So how come doesn't say Yehallelu?
Why doesn't it say Yehallelu? Let's take a look. Well, it does say Hallelu et Hashem kol goyim. Right? But I hear what you're saying. Why don't we use the Lashon of Atit? Very good. Good question. That's a question to a certain extent, but it's not a great answer. It's not as good as your question. But I do know, and I'm not a great Hebraicist by any means, or even a mildly adequate one, but the idea of Hoveh form sometimes references the future. Okay.
No, because I was thinking of as Yashir, and that was a remez also to.
Correct. But Yashir, right?
Right, so I'm saying they didn't say Ashar, or.
Correct.
Which would have made more sense at the time, and
correct.
Still been, you know, kind of like.
You're right. But it is within the legitimate. I mean, again, the question's really good. It's an adequate response, okay? And I have a friend, former colleague, who is a real Hebraicist, and he would be able to tell you, you know, like this, 20 instances where Hoveh is used as Atit. Okay, that much I can tell you. Okay, so let's just finish the last three lines in the Radak. And he says, Ulafisha Amar B'tachlit HaMizmor HaLuka. Since it says, now it's interesting, he's using tachlit the way you and I would use the word self. It's interesting. Because usually what do we say tachlit means?
Purpose.
Means a purpose, a goal. Well, that's the hadchil. Okay? And that's with a chet. This is tachlit to mean like the idea of the purpose. Ulafisha Amar B'tachlit HaMizmor HaLuka, since it says here at the end of the Mizmor HaLuka, right? Sha'amar Keneged Yisrael. Okay? And that's being said by what? By specifically by the Jewish people. So this brings out the next idea, idea number six. So, Ra'ah B'ruach HaKodesh, says the Radak, David HaMelech saw this in Ruach HaKodesh, because David was also a bit of a prophet. Okay? And then it says, Ki ko ha'umot, and here's, in a sense, he picks up Hindi's question, and he says, oh, we've got to change the verb form here. Ki ko ha'umot yahalalu adayin, because everyone's already been praising, will be praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu then. So then who's saying haluka? It's got to be who? The Jewish people. V'amar k'neged kulam. And in regards to everyone, it says, and we'll see this in the inside in a moment, Hallelu et Hashem kol goyim, right? Praise Hashem, all the nations, Shab chuchu, kol amin, and give him shevach for hoda'ah. I mean, how you really translate a significant difference between Hallelu and Shab chuchu, that's a really good question. Ha'amin, so in other words, everybody is praising and describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu and thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as he says, by the way, just so you know that it's not me, Radak himself says, "V'hu kafel ha'inyan b'milot shanot." It's a repetition of the same idea with two different words. But again, l'shabeyach is to praise, but isn't lahalel also to praise? I mean, it's kind of, do they have nuance differences? Yes, but for our purposes, they're very similar, which is why the Radak says, the same idea is being mentioned in two different phrases. Okay. Now, let's go to Pasuk Bet at this point. Ki gavar aleinu chasdo. Now, very, very interesting. This almost sounds like the Rambam in the Mor and the Nevuchim. Remember we talked about chesed? We said chesed can have two different ideas. Chesed can be a positive, chesed can be a negative. Okay? I don't mean like the quasi-Yiddish phrase that some of us will say, like, no, I'm not a chesed case. I don't want to be treated like that. Right? You'll hear people say that sometimes. Now, you want to do me a favor? That's nice, but don't treat me like it's a chesed case. Okay, that's a pejorative. That's not what I'm talking about. But rather, actually, certain kinds, it's very strange, certain kinds of illicit relations are described as being a chesed. Not a chesed meaning kindness, but an overflow of misbehavior, if you will. Okay? So, whatever we have, whenever we have the word chesed, the Rambam says in Mor and Nevuchim, it means overflow. And look how well that fits into how to translate this. Ki gavar aleinu chasdo, for his chesed has overtaken us. In other words, chesed itself, which means overflow, it has overflowed us. Okay? Now, I must tell you, when I hit the phrase, the emet Hashem, I was stopped in my tracks. I have no idea what it meant. I have no idea. I mean, sure, I can translate it easily. The truth of Hashem. What do you mean?
We said that only Hashem knows the full truth. It's like only He knows the full justice.
Right. I'm with you 100%. But I said to myself, is that an extraneous idea that I know, and I'm thrusting it onto David HaMelech's statement in Tehillim, or what does Emet Hashem mean, so to speak, from the inside out? Organically. That's what I was bothered by. You understand what I'm saying? You know, this is one thing for me to have an idea, and I know like Hashem Kecham Emet. Okay, so I know what that means. But is that what David HaMelech meant? So here too, once again, we turn to the people of the evening. One, of course, you know already, is going to be the Radak. Okay? And the other is going to be, in this case, Rashi. So you saw how before the Radak was in the center? First comes Rashi. So Rashi says, V'emet Hashem li'olam. So what does that mean? So says Rashi, Sheshamar haftachato, sheftiach et ha'avot. So that means that Hashem is shomer, right? Haftachato, which is one of the ways of when we say Hashem Elokecha emet, that's how that's actually explained. That he's emet to do what? In truth, he's going to keep his promises, which is a little bit different than what I initially said to myself then. Easy shmeasy, I can do this. I said, nah. And then bam, it's like hitting a brick wall and I had to go to the Mefarshim. I just couldn't get it. But that's what Rashi says. Sheshamar haftachato sheftiach et ha'avot. Specifically to the avot. Okay, now I'm mentioning that because if you drop down, I apologize, it wasn't the Radak, the second person, but the Malbim. Look at the Malbim says in the 19th century. Amar v'emet Hashem li'olam. Okay, and it says in the truth of Hashem's forever, Lotso Rotse Lomar, Haftachato Nishar Liolam. That means Hashem's promises forever. So there's a nuance here. Rashi says, what promise specifically? The promise to the Avot, right? That's how Rashi explains it. But that's not what the Malbim says. The Malbim instead says Haftachato Nishar Liolam, and that means that his promise, all the promises that Kutcher Brichu made throughout all of Jewish history, not just to the Avot, that's what's Nishar Liolam. Okay? You got that? So basically it's a very interesting kind of idea. The Malbim's explaining Hashem Emet the way we explain the idea that of what Hashem itself means. So Ne'eman L'Shalem. That's one of the ways we talked about. Hashem for sure is going to reward those who are deserving of reward. And that's in a sense what the Malbim is doing here. So far so good, guys? Alright. So you see, just because it's two psukim, it's not necessarily so easy. There's some challenges here to try to understand. All right, any questions before we go on?
Good things come in small packages.
Okay, all right. Next. Hodu Hashem ki tov, ki li'olam chasdo. There's two different ideas here. I suppose the second one is the difficult one. Hodu Hashem ki tov, give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because He is good. Okay, I can deal with that. And after all, am I here to tell the tale? 100%. I'm telling the tale. So it must mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good because even lowly human beings, right, who don't necessarily have a lot of zechuyot, we're still here. So, Hodu Hashem ki tov, Hashem really is great. Now, given the vagaries of life, comes the challenge of ki li'olam chasdo. His kindness, his overflowing goodness is forever. So for those of us, and I think at this stage in our life, it's every one of us, we have faced a lot of challenges. And it's very difficult sometimes when we face those challenges, whether they're health, whether they're pranasa, whether they're shiduchim, whatever particular situation it may have been for you personally. And this is not, a tell-all situation here. It's, you know, we all have our own private challenges. So whatever challenge we face, I'm quite sure that most of us at the moment of those challenges did not sit there and go, great, Hodu Lashem Ki Tov Ki Lam Chasto. I think we're challenged. I think our emunah is challenged. Okay? And that's okay. Because unless you're going to be mouthing simplicities, right, you're going to face situations precisely because you believe where you feel challenged. Everyone understand what I'm saying? So what do? So obviously when Ploni Ben Ploni is going through a particular challenge, you don't really sit there and say to yourself, as I said a moment ago, that, you know, everything is gan's tov. So then I think we can look at Kilim Chasto is talking really in the ultimate sense. In senses that we don't necessarily know, understand, or directly feel ourselves. But rather, so to speak, and we've used this many times, as the Rav Soloveitchik himself said, we only see the back of the tapestry. We don't see the big picture. But ultimately, even if we can't understand it, ki le'olam chasto. Yes?
When we hear somebody passing, we say, Baruch Hashem Emes. We use
yes.
the word Emes, not Tov. So why are we... You know what I'm saying? Like, why don't we use the word Emes here instead of Tov?
Ki le'olam amito?
I like, you're saying...
You're saying, Hodu Hashem ki Tov, and Hodu Hashem... Is that what
I don't know,
saying?
Like, yeah, you're saying that he's the judge of the truth and, you know, whatever. So, like, wouldn't that be more fitting over here, the way you're explaining it?
I can hear that. I can hear that. But I guess what we need to
or
do...
Or we should be saying ki tov when you hear of a passing.
Well, we are duty-bound, according to the Gemara, to be mevarech Hashem aha tov ahara. Everything, because everything is from Kodesh Baruch Hu. And by the way, I mean, the idea there is Ra is relative. It's what appears Ra to us. But it's not necessarily really ultimately Ra.
It may be bad for you, but not for the person who passed away, because the person's not in right. pain or whatever.
Right. And again, sometimes it's difficult for us, because we love the person that's passed, or we love the person who's suffering.
But what I'm saying, instead of saying Emes there, why don't we say Tov there? Or instead of saying Tov here,
you
why don't we say
you want to say Baruch Dayan HaTov?
I don't know.
Well, it's you know, I think that it would be well nigh impossible for anybody who knew what they were saying at the moment when someone's passed away to say Baruch Dayan HaTov, because a person doesn't feel that way. And Chazal were very sensitive to the fact that people don't feel that way. I mean, for example, you read the way Rav Soloveitchik describes how he felt when his beloved, very beloved, wife passed away. And he writes with pathos and with poignancy and with a sense of despair, a sense of anger, a sense that, in a sense, he feels that, like David HaMelech says, okay, in one of the Tehillim that was, in a sense, taken away from us, says, you know, Kaili, Kaili, Lama, you know, Azvani, why have you abandoned me? And the Rav describes that as a feeling when a person loses a loved one. You know, so you're really not going to be able to say Baruch Dayan HaTov because you don't feel that way. A person doesn't; it's not legitimate. But but a person can say Baruch Dayan HaEmet because what that is really saying is that it's ultimately not necessarily quote unquote good through our lenses, but it's ultimately that which should happen because it's Hashem's will. And that's really what we're doing. We're bending our knee to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when we say that. And that we're also saying at the same time that we're not the arbiters of ultimately what's right and wrong, what's and so forth.
So if you don't feel it at the moment, Should you say this or should you not say it?
Avodu Hashem ki tov ki yimchasta.
You don't feel that at the moment.
Well, I'm not quite sure. What's the context? Give me a context.
Somebody passed away, and maybe you're out of God forbid Shiva, or even in the Shloshim, or even in the year, and you have Rosh Chodesh comes up, and you're supposed to say it, and you don't really feel it at the moment.
Do you say Hallel in a Shiva house?
Yes.
Yeah, I always thought you didn't. I don't know, sometimes in the back of my mind,
I'm fairly certain that it is said in a Shiva house.
And the Avelim stay in the room.
Well, they're not allowed to daven on Rosh Chodesh. Avelim don't daven on Rosh Chodesh. The cloud.
They don't daven at all?
No. They don't daven for the Amud.
No, I'm saying, let's say somebody, God forbid, is saying Shiva, and it happens to be Rosh Chodesh.
Well, I mean, obviously, we're not talking about Chol HaMoed or Yom Tov. We're talking about it's a regular Rosh Chodesh. So, I believe that Hallel, in fact, still is said. I'd have to double check that, whether, you know, specifically the halacha psuka, but I think it is. I can't imagine that all the people there aren't going to say Hallel.
And the Avil says it too?
Yes, as far as I know. But again, I'd have to double check it to be sure. That I can't tell you with authority because I'm not positive, so I don't want to say that. Okay? But it's a good question.
Now, the other question I have is...
But just to get back to your answer, to your question. If Klal Yisrael is saying it, then and you should say it too. Okay? For a lot of different reasons. But most of all is because, you know, they're with Ploni Ben Ploni Bitsara. And in a sense, you're not you personally, but Ploni Ben Ploni is getting spiritual sustenance and strength precisely by belonging to Klal Yisrael. So then you join with Ploni Ben Ploni joins with Klal Yisrael in that situation.
So then why do they go out for Lechadodi?
Say what?
So then why do they not end up for Lechadodi?
That they're basically at that moment they're transitioning from showing public avelut to which they were allowed to do until that moment, until showing only private avelut on Shabbat. That's how that works.
But when you say lechadodi, it's Shabbos.
Well, it depends what time the davening is exactly.
You're welcoming Shabbat.
Right, you're welcoming Shabbat, but it hasn't yet necessarily. You're supposed to say lechadodi prior to Shkia.
If it's early minion versus regular minion?
It's always before it's nightfall. Okay, that's when you should be davening. That's when you should be doing Al-Khadadi because you're welcoming it. Right? That's when you should be doing it. So the person's really transitioning, right, from having just davened for the Amud as an Avil, okay, going out while everyone's singing. Okay, and rejoicing that it's Shabbat, and then coming back and joining everyone, and because you're not allowed to mourn publicly on the Shabbat. Yeah.
As a woman, if let's say I'm lighting candles, setting the table, getting distracted, look out the window, it's already past Shkia. Do I say Lechadodi or not?
You still could say Lechadodi. It's not usher. Okay, but
it's a welcoming Shabbos.
But ideally, it should be before. Okay? All right, so we'll stop here. We're going to continue, God willing, next week, looking at the word Na, Nun Aleph, in great depth with Pasuk Bet, and so forth. I don't want to give it away, but thank you one and all for coming this evening.